Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Troy Noons is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo, and with me today is Dan Lyons.
Hey, everyone. Happy birthday, John.
Thanks. I'm old now.
Yeah, you're just super washed.
Yeah, this is quite the revelation. This is now a blog run by an adult, which has not been the case since Sean left.
Now I think Sean might contest that it was before too, but
yeah,
we'll give him more benefit of the doubt.
I am now 30 years old, for those who are listening and wondering why I'm particularly shell-shocked by this birthday. It is what it is. I'm optimistic that this will be a good year.
Let's hope.
Yeah.
In terms of Syracuse, you know, it should hopefully go better than 29. We'll see.
Although, yeah, I mean, if I could just like bottle up like the buzzer beaters and the Clemson game, and that could be what I saw as the Syracuse 29, that's fine.
Very high highs, and then a lot of very middling, like everything else.
Yeah, like that's kind of the problem, is that like the highs were awesome, but then they were just quickly swatted down by the just mediocrity of the rest of it. And that's just not for like, that's for like everybody but Justin Knight, as far as Syracuse athletics goes. Like, that's pretty much how it went.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, Justin Knight's just like, you know, he's not of this world. Like, honestly, like one of our best Syracuse athletes in recent history in any sport, and probably doesn't get enough credit for like all of the amazing things he's done.
Yeah, I mean, it's Kevin's obviously the best person to be able to completely, you know, put him in perspective. But he's someone who we really should, I think as a group, this isn't just like a, you know, you and me, this is an everybody thing. Take more time to appreciate him now, and then accept the fact that like he is going to be someone that, you know, you look at, you know, down the road, and if SU track and field continues to be the behemoth it is, that people start talking about him and the program, you know, in the same sort of breath that you know, some of the greater track legends have.
Yeah, I think he really goes down into like the pantheon. Honestly, I don't know how we got on Justin Knight here, but I think he goes down like the short list of like honestly like greatest SU athletes. And obviously, the sport isn't as public facing as, you know, the big three sports for Syracuse, but it's hard not to put him on there. So yes, he did well last year, and every year he's been at SU. And the rest, you know, work in progress.
No, completely. All right. Speaking of works in progress, Dan, you got to probably watch more of the Syracuse-Virginia game than I did, because I was at Staples Center.
Au contraire, I was at a concert in Brooklyn.
Ah, that's right, you were at the Killers.
So I've seen, like, I've seen extended highlights, I've read some stuff, did not see the full game. So, yeah, I kind of have an idea of how it went, probably closer than I thought. I kind of assumed UVA would handle this pretty easily, and it seems like we were pretty scrappy. Especially considering, you know, how good defensively they are. I'm actually kind of shocked we broke 60 and, you know, handled their very good offense pretty well overall.
Yeah, what frustrates me anyway is just, like, they lost to West Virginia, a.k.a. Press Virginia. And you know why they lost that game? A lot of it was because of the press. So if you're Syracuse, in given your history with Virginia in recent years, wouldn't you have just like taken all of this information together and gone, I wonder what's going to work here, and then done it for more than like only a couple minutes?
Obviously, this team is better defensively than they have been for a few years now, but he's been pretty quick to put the press on even early and at least to switch up the look that the offenses are getting. So it is pretty interesting that he didn't lean on that, especially, you know, obviously you're not going to compare everything to the NCAA tournament game because that was a, you know, very specific event. It's a little interesting that we didn't lean on that more.
Yeah, it is weird. I don't know if it's just the depth issues or whatever. Boeheim did seem particularly averse in this game. I feel like it was something that we were busting out earlier. In some recent games, obviously, you know, the one against Georgetown in particular, then it helped spark a win there. Virginia clearly can't really get outside of its comfort zone. That's something that has plagued them against us, and it's plagued them, I think, in the NCAA tournament a little bit, because if you play against teams that are just built differently than they're prepared to deal with, it quickly kind of goes south for them. That doesn't take away from their hot start, the fact that they're doing really well this year, but it does kind of, just speak to, if we all know this, Boeheim obviously knows this, it's not a damning thing for him necessarily, but it is a confusing one at this point, at least for the one game.
Right. You brought up the depth issues. I'm personally starting to get worried about this. Obviously, this hasn't been a deep team at any point this year, but this is what, our second straight game or second in three games where we have had no bench scoring at all. And I'm looking, the only stat outside of fouls that any of our bench guys put up was one steal by Howard Washington. Really not ideal. Like, we saw earlier in the year, like, Sidibe obviously is 100%. I think if he was, he'd be playing a lot more than 5 minutes, or like these like little brief moments in games. But he obviously doesn't look like he has the offensive game that he had earlier in the year. I'm sure a lot of that is health-wise. Dolezal is not, an offensive juggernaut by any means, but like he's shown things in other games where he, can be kind of a scrapper and get some putbacks and do some stuff like that. And he didn't. No, none of them even took a shot. So it's pretty shocking. That not only, obviously this bench is never going to be a huge scoring unit, but you can't go multiple games without getting any points out of them, or even like no field goal attempts. Like you can't have players who are just not going to ever shoot the ball. And unfortunately, with this team, you only have three guys who are at all a threat to make something happen on their own on the entire roster. So it's we've talked about it the last couple of weeks, but it's just a major issue for how this team is constructed, and it makes it very easy to defend.
No, completely. And I know another thing, and I don't know if I believe it necessarily, but a lot of people have been saying that Tyus Battle looks like he's already kind of on his last legs. Dan, do you buy that? I mean, I don't know if I completely do, but I also do think it's worrisome, if there are even murmurs about it, that he, just 17 games in, could potentially be running out of gas, especially when we need him probably now more than ever.
It's tough without having seen like the entire game, but I mean it wouldn't shock me. Like if we're going back, the last time he played fewer than 37 minutes was against Toledo when he played 29. He had foul trouble, and he has had like a little bit of a tapering off in terms of his scoring. Obviously, he was pretty much a cinch for 18, at least 18 points up through Georgetown that once, which was the Toledo game again. That wasn't fouls; it was injury when he got hurt, and he still took 14 shots. He was just off. But then since, he's had 13 against Buffalo, 11 against the Bonnies. He had 22 against Michigan, but 17 for Svatak, 13 at Wake Forest, 21 against Notre Dame, which is a nice bounce back game for him. But then 12 in this game. And obviously UVA is the toughest defensive team we've faced thus far. But the fact that he's played so many minutes, like he's only played under 30 minutes three times, and he hasn't really had a night where he has had much rest since that Toledo game, and that Toledo game was due to injury, so it wasn't like that was a very, easy cruise through to a win for him either. So yeah, I think when you have guys playing 40 minutes almost every night, 39 against UVA, it's tough to not think that might be a thing. And he's also played 45 minutes twice in overtime games, and it just hasn't been a break, and he's obviously a ball dominant guard for this team, which is it makes it even more taxing. So, yeah, it's definitely a concern. He just can't really come out because Howard Washington's the only bench backcourt player we have, and Howard Washington is just not in a point where he can play more than a couple spot minutes. And if this roster was a little deeper, he probably wouldn't be playing at all.
Right, and I mean, if he roster was deeper, if Elijah Hughes was able to play, if we had gotten Jordan Tucker, like these are all things that would have potentially helped out. The depth's an issue. It's been an issue for this team in a lot of different seasons. Sometimes self-induced, other times not so much. I do think that, this team might be starting to suffer from a little bit of that. Like a lot of Syracuse teams have run guys for 38 to 40 minutes a night, and it's been fine. To some extent, obviously, this year it seems like maybe not. I felt like overall, like Syracuse put in a pretty good effort against UVA, all things considered. So it's tough to really buy the like, they're on their last leg narrative, and especially because pressing late was getting results for them. also makes it hard to believe. But before the end of the season, maybe. Like, we've seen this before. I know back in 07, 08 with Dante Green and Johnny Flynn team, like that was another team going five or six deep most nights. Everybody was playing, 36 to 40 minutes. Definitely wasn't ideal, but those guys were able to run. It's not to say that Battle or Howard or anybody's a lesser athlete comparatively, but those teams were really asking a lot just out of those guards. Flynn at the time had a motor like, among the best college players I've ever seen in terms of just that energy that he was able to provide, even if it wasn't always, as consistent. And I do think Johnny Flynn's underrated as a player at SU in terms of the last, 20 years or so. But I digress. I think that any team is going to kind of fall victim to this at some point, especially if you're putting so much on, Battle and Howard in particular. And, Chukwu, you never wanted to play 35 minutes. Brissett seems like he can play the 35, 36 minutes, and that's great. But we'll see. This is not, SU's not the only team with this issue again. Like, I know a frequent, point of conversation in NBA circles is what Tom Thibodeau might be doing with the Timberwolves and really running guys like Karl-Anthony Towns and Jimmy Butler into the ground. So just as people are watching that situation pretty closely to see what the Wolves do at the kind of midway point for the NBA, I think we, at least in particular, are watching what SU is doing now and seeing if this energy conversation becomes a thing.
Yeah, you brought up Chukwu. I'm actually impressed with how he's handled this, because I don't think it was really in the plan to have him play this many minutes at all. Obviously, we thought we would have Taurean Thompson, which is a whole issue. Obviously, people are aware that that was like a major problem for the roster construction because it clearly blindsided us. But we thought we would have him in the front court. And we obviously thought Sidibe would be more ready to, play, which obviously injury is hampered. Even going back a couple of years, based on like when we thought guys would be here, today we have Mustafa Jang has gotten clear to play for Western Kentucky, which is great for him. Back when Bam was building this team, we thought we would have him, and he would be another guy who would be, able to put in some minutes in the front court. So it's just been a lot of like very a lot of strange issues that have gone making this roster what it is. All that being said, I'm actually pretty impressed how Chukwu's handled playing this minutes load. He's been, especially in this latest stretch, he's played over 30 minutes, I think, all but two games in the last like six or seven. It's really impressive. I assume we would see him for maybe like 18 to 20 minutes a game this year.
Well, and he's showing himself to be, far more effective than I think we had banked on. I think for a lot of the offseason, we had thought that, Sidibe was probably going to get more of the minutes, at center, or they'd have an even split. There maybe, you just see Chukwu with like the ceremonial start, and then get the quick hook, and that hasn't happened, obviously. We've seen a very different player. We've seen a very different player, especially over probably the last few weeks. To be honest, you should probably write something about that. That's not directed at you and me. That's just directed at us as a site. And we should probably write a little bit more about, Chukwu's improvement, because honestly, like the effort he put in last night, sure, only 9 points, but 4 of 6 from the floor, which is probably one of his, without looking, one of his better efforts in terms of shooting the basketball. 1 of 2 from the free throw line. The glaring statistic and the one that really should take the headlines, though, is that 10 offensive rebounds number, creating those second chance points. Obviously, you need Syracuse to be able to do something with those second chance points, but 10 rebounds is great. 10 offensive rebounds is phenomenal. That's probably better than the average for most teams around the country. It's 16 boards overall. SU actually did really nicely on the boards after all that talk we had about just a really kind of bad effort on the boards and all the offensive boards in the Wake Forest and Notre Dame losses. Chukwu ended up with the lion's share of offensive rebounds in a game when SU had 19 overall, which will certainly push that average right back to the 14 to 15 mark, which is one of the best in the country.
Yeah, if we can start to get back to winning rebounding margins like this against, I think UVA's, I don't know how they are this year.
Not great.
Okay, so they're not a great rebounding, but like Notre Dame shouldn't have been close to us rebounding in terms of, without Vonzie Colson. So now that, SU beat UVA by 10. I think that's a pretty good sign. And again, like, staying this close to UVA, having a late surge to try to get back in it with a few minutes left, like, overall, not a bad performance at all. It's just tough coming on the heels of two other losses. And one is where you start in conference play. We talked about last week, like, they're going to need to steal a game or two, and the schedule's not super friendly. And it would have been nice to pull this one out. But in a vacuum, like, I'm not going to get too worked up about losing at Virginia by 7 points.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and that's always the biggest issue for this team with losses now is going to be each loss just adds another notch that makes it harder and harder to get to that 500 mark. Obviously, no matter how many good wins, at some point you need to start getting great wins. You can only take on so many losses. The St. Bonaventure loss in non-conference also kind of deals us an additional, like, not the St. Bonaventure is a bad team or a bad loss, but the St. Bonaventure game does create this kind of conversation now just around, okay, like, at what point do the losses become too much? I mean, we've already got, you know, 5. It could potentially be 6 this weekend against Florida State. Then you have 3 straight winnable games, but even if you're back at 4-4, like you and I talked about since the preseason, you know, 9-9 in ACC play is not going to cut it, even if you just win the games you're supposed to, because that's probably not going to get you any wins against tournament teams, since we do face, you know, BC, who I'm not buying as an at-large bid, especially if they got destroyed by Duke last night. Pitt, who is absolute garbage, and they lost by 35 to Duke tonight. And then, you know, Georgia Tech, who probably isn't that great. And the Wake Forest, who's probably not going to be a tournament team either. So, I mean, if we already lost the Wake Forest game, but if you lose, you know, what, 6 of 7? I mean, if you win 6 of 7 against that group, great. But now you still need to figure out, okay, like, where are my other quality wins coming from? Because right now none of them qualify as well as we might need them to.
Yeah, I mean, we have a shot coming up here, and it's what looks like a very good Florida State team, number 23 in the country, which would be nice. I'm not banking on it. Unfortunately, it's on the road. FSU's won something like 23 straight home games.
There's like 35.
Oh, it's 35, it's even that high?
Yeah,
I know I saw the number earlier.
I thought it was pretty high.
Yeah, which is one of the best parts of the country. Yeah, so it's going to be tough. Like, Florida State would be a very nice one. You have to hold serve against BC, which, you know, at this point, even though, who knows if that's even holding serve. BC's been up and down, but they're much improved from what they've been over the last couple of years. Obviously, they've beat Wake. They beat Duke earlier in the year. And then we have, you know, you gotta pick up the 2 games against Pitt. Obviously, that wasn't going to help your resume too much, but they'll kill it if you lose them. Same with Georgia Tech. And then you have UVA again, which is, you know, maybe not the ideal team to have twice in the season, but we have them at the Dome. It'll probably be a pretty good crowd, assuming this team doesn't totally go in the tank. And it's a team I think Syracuse can beat, like, based on this last game. I think you put the game in the Dome, you have a similar effort. By Chukwu, you have a slightly more efficient offensive effort, and I think it's a winnable game, and that could be one you pick up. But I don't think one win like that's going to be enough. I think you need 2 or 3, and you need to clean up against the bottom half and do well against, like, your programs, which I'm concerned about.
Right. And, yeah, like, you still don't know, like, what Louisville is. You still don't know really what BC is, even if I just trash them. Like, you don't know what the hell Clemson is. Notice a bunch of these games are set for ACC Network Extra, which probably frustrates fans after probably a larger than average number of non-conference games on regular TV. It looks like 5 of the next 6 are ACC Network Extra games, which shouldn't thrill us.
It's not ideal. Hopefully the ACC Network proper is not too far away, and we can solve a lot of these issues. For football, this year was like a harrowing experience trying to find the game on a weekly basis.
Oh,
but I feel like we were on ACC Network Extra like, what, 2/3 of the year at least?
Yeah, although, no, I feel like, because you're a cord cutter, right?
Yeah, but I was usually, for football, I was usually at work.
All right.
So,
well, I know, like, yeah, like, we had the RSN for, I feel like most of the games I had the RSN. I think I had it for every game after Central Michigan.
Yeah, we had that for a bunch. It's still, like, having to figure out if you're on Yes or WLNY or whatever on a weekly basis. It's not the end of the world, but
Right. Well, for me, it was scanning every single Fox Sports affiliate. Because you can't just get the one, you have to get all of them. So then it was
Oh,
me,
really?
yeah, so then it was my DirecTV scanning through each one to figure out which one it was on.
Fun.
Yeah, but that nothing was worse than the Middle Tennessee game where most of us missed the first quarter, probably for the best, while we were just given a blank screen from ACC Network Extra the entire time, and I had to watch most of the game on my phone.
I do remember that. What a fun day.
What a delightful day that ended with.
What a great game that we probably should have just been like, all right, we're just not going to watch.
Yeah.
ACC doesn't want us to see this. It's probably for the
Obviously.
best. We should take the sign.
That ended with some with an unpleasant fellow having a cigar in his mouth
Yes.
in a non-smoking area on a non-smoking campus.
Just breaking rules, the Stott Schaefer story. Just really, just what a rebel.
Just a real hard-nosed rebel. All right, before halftime, one other thing I wanted to bring up here. Virginia. We're going to write about this probably at the end of January, early February, before the next Virginia game. But, Dan, are they a rival? Like, I kind of feel like this has more legs just from a fan perspective and from a, like, consequences perspective than the Duke series has.
I think early the first 2 years, I think it was clearly Duke had something. We were better, and we were competitive with them. Virginia, obviously, you have the Malachi game, which was impactful for both sides. Virginia has been very good. We've kind of split since the first couple of years when we couldn't beat them. We've been like pretty down the middle in terms of these games. I feel like we've had the nice game up at the Dome. So I don't know. I don't feel any particular animosity towards
That's
Virginia,
what I mean. It's like a
which is
fun
optimistic.
rivalry.
Yeah, it's kind of like a fun competitive one. I'm trying to think of like compare it to like one of the Big East rivalries,
Marquette?
but those were kind of yeah. But we had like Marquette's number for so long.
Oh, yeah. I did really
I
hate
don't
them.
know.
I did really hate Louisville.
Yeah.
Big East was just such a rivalry based on hate, though. And I feel like in the ACC, since there's like some Southern sensibilities involved, everybody's a little bit more congenial towards each other.
UConn Georgetown was a lot of hate. I'm trying to think of who else we used to be in a conference with. It feels like we're officially getting to the point where that feels like so long ago.
I know.
And like for a couple of years, like you kind of almost forgot half the time. The problem is like all these
South
other teams we had simply
Florida.
just. Oh yeah, do we ever? I can't remember ever losing to South Florida.
I think we did like once.
Yeah, all right. It was the 2011-2012 season, which was did we actually lose to South Florida with that team? I'm looking.
Yeah, we it was like I think it was
No,
down
we
a,
didn't. It
we
was
never lost.
just a really bad game. It was 56-48. We looked like garbage.
Wasn't there like one where like Dominic James or whoever like went off for like four like 35, 38 points or something?
Maybe. Ooh, Dominic James. What a blast from the past. I'm looking. I just can't remember us ever losing to them. There
We
was another game
lost
where.
in 08.
The 08 season, like 07, 08?
Yes, 89,
Okay, so
78.
that was before I was there, so that would explain why I don't remember it.
No, this was
Yeah, I'm looking.
wasn't Dominic. It was oh Dominic Jones. Sorry,
Dominic Jones.
Dominic
Dominic James is a
Jones.
different player, right? I think.
Yeah, Dominic Jones had 29 points. This was the game I was thinking of.
Okay. Yeah, the only two USF games I remember were the gray jerseys, which we did not lose. We won really ugly. And then in my freshman year, 08-09, we played them at South Florida, and we snuck by them. And Johnny Flynn threw down like a windmill dunk after the buzzer for no, or right before the buzzer for no reason. Yeah, 59-54. It was like a really frustrating game, and Johnny was just like fed up about something. So like right before the buzzer, he threw down like an open court windmill after like the other team, and it was maybe not the classiest move that's ever happened.
No.
And he got some heat for that. But yeah, I don't think we ever lost to USF while I was there, or obviously now since.
I just think
And it's also
like,
weird to think that we were in a basketball conference with USF for a long time.
yeah, now UConn is clawing to get out of said conference still. Although I feel like there's some legs now.
Maybe
I feel like they're going to be
like
out.
Villanova. Maybe Villanova's a good UConn, they I don't know. I feel like they're gonna try to make football work as long as they can. I don't know if they should.
I just don't actually like. I mean, I know no escalators is like broke down the money situation. Like, it's really not that lucrative for them at all.
No, I think there's a lot of logic behind ditching it. I think giving up football is such a big,
Move that
grandiose,
you can't get back
especially
into it at this
considering,
point.
right, especially because they've invested a lot in that program, facilities-wise and everything else. I think it might be the right thing to do. I just think that they would really, really need a couple more years of just real mediocrity to decide that that's the best course of action.
Which just might be the case for them.
Oh, I expect it to be. I just don't know. It'd also be really, you're really cutting your losses big to give up football. Like the schools that give up football are not like the schools with the brands of UConn at this point.
True. Yeah, I mean, if
I'm going back to where we were here. Not to cut you off, sorry.
No, it's fine. I think Nova's probably the right comparison, like, if anything. Although, like, I
That it feels
still.
right.
Yeah, because you think about it, you have, you have Scotty Effing Reynolds and all these other
I
guys
think
who.
Wright was pretty likable overall. I never really hated Villanova. I know some a lot of people do. A lot of like the Philly area SU friends I have hated them, obviously, but I never had like a lot of hate towards Villanova. But the games were often very fun. We beat each other regularly. It wasn't like a one-sided thing ever.
Right. They were
We
usually close.
both usually close. It was pretty I think for a while. It was like definitely our third biggest rivalry, but like obviously didn't have the hate of UConn or Georgetown. Because St. John's is so down. So I think that's probably the best comparison.
Yeah.
Kind of like, obviously, Villanova is like a way different style. Virginia, is what they are. I appreciate how they play a little more than others, but I also love teams that dead out and run. They both start with the letter V.
Hateable, scrappy seniors.
Yes, they always have seniors, different kinds of seniors, but like Virginia's players, like every year their star players are like a very different guy. Like Villanova was more like they had these guards and Scotty Reynolds for a million years, but then they always had like the guard that was good, and you knew he came up through the ranks. Versus like Virginia, which it could be this year it's Kyle Guy, it's a sharpshooter. It was Joe Harris one year who was not as form fitting as Kyle Guy in terms of like his role, and then you had Brogdon who was like a do it all wing. So they have a little more like diversity among like the types of star players they have, but they always have their seniors. So yeah, I think that's a pretty good comparison. The two teams aren't very alike, but in terms of like where we fit in terms of like basketball rivals, I think that's probably the best comparison I can think of.
Yeah, and I mean, said it's you're never gonna find like a completely analogous one, just because again, like Big East was built on like hate and like some respect, while I feel like the ACC is built on these Southern sensibilities of like be nice to your neighbor even if you hate their guts. But
Yeah, I buy that.
it's just, I mean, you and I both know, just being from the Northeast, there's a different way that sports rivalries are worked out in public.
The Big East was a very rude conference in a very lovable way. Like it was
Yeah.
just, it wasn't here to make friends. They played like a pretty physical brand of basketball, and a lot of schools hated a lot of other schools. Like there were so many rivalries thrown in between all these different teams. So yeah, I think ACC is definitely a little more congenial overall, except that there was like still some weird animosity between like the old school ACC schools and the new ones.
And not even all of them, just some of them.
And there's
Like,
some,
we hate, for some
just
reason,
some.
us and NC State hate each other. I know us and, I mean, us and, I feel like us and NC State hate each other more than us and Pitt do. Which
Yeah,
is.
probably. I think it was A because I think it spurns that stems back to that before we were in the
The
conference. I think it
comment.
was a year before we joined.
The Denny's and,
The Gottfried comments didn't help.
yeah, and then Gottfried, like, and no, well, then it was that. And then right after the comments, then we smoked them in Raleigh.
That was what I was thinking. We beat the hell out of them in Raleigh, and there were a lot of Syracuse fans there, and they clearly didn't know that was going to happen. But schools I think that we share comments with are like understand like we travel very well for basketball. NC State didn't know that, and their fans were annoyed. Their fans were very, very bitter after that game.
Yeah, I feel like NC State and Clemson are like kind of the. I mean, they're also just like the same school in different states. But yeah, they.
Ooh, Clemson fans will love that.
Yeah, I mean, this seems like a, well, isn't this like a stupid rivalry, like Textile Bowl or some shit?
That sounds right. Well, something is a textile bowl. I'm not sure which.
That's probably it's probably
That
it.
is a, that is a an ACC rivalry. It does
Yeah,
involve NC State. It
it
is
is
NC
NC
State
State.
Clemson.
Boom. I know my obscure
They play for a
rivalry
trophy.
games. It's probably just a
Oh,
piece of
no, the
fabric.
trophy is literally a bowl.
See, I would think they just hand each other like a swatch of fabric back and forth.
Yo, this is such an odd, such a generic, like, Big Ten looking thing.
Oh, God. Although
It looks
in.
like, because it's one of those that has like a million year panels on it. It's literally a bowl.
Yeah, I'd rather
It's
just.
a bowl on a.
Can they just hand cloth back and forth? I feel like that'd be better.
Just some freshly made cloth.
Yeah, or just like, no, you could just start weaving a quilt so everybody, the winner gets a patch in their color. So then you have this just growing orange and red quilt.
And you can kind of see how the how things have developed based on the color.
Yeah,
That'd be interesting. I like that a lot better. That'd be
and
so much
someone
cooler.
stitches the score in. Like, put me in, coach. Like, somebody have me run a college athletic department because I just made this rivalry interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's that's a much better trophy.
See, as much as
It's not as good
I.
as the broken chair trophy,
No,
but
well,
what or,
the Bits of Broken Chair trophy is the best trophy in sports.
yeah, it's easy. The $5 bits of broken chair trophy. I
Yeah.
had to make sure I got the full name. That's the best one because it was made by the internet,
Right.
and it's a very internet
And
trophy.
people actually care about it.
Yeah,
Unlike most of the Big
it's
Ten
great.
trophies.
No, that's the best one. That's the best college ball trophy. Like in terms of just the rivalry is not the best, because who cares about Nebraska, Minnesota? But the trophy itself, easily the best.
One of the worst is the BC Clemson trophy.
I forgot that a trophy too. The ACC rivalry trophies are just bad.
They're just yeah, like let's just get whichever idiot the Big Ten put in charge of all these trophies, and let's just make them for us. Because like, there's a
Also, why
real.
the hell? Why are B the Horford Fadden? Why does BC Clemson need a trophy? No one, do either schools care about each other at all?
They just like it, there's a whole Wikipedia entry on it. It's literally because like the fans just liked each other when they like visited one another.
Yeah, stupid.
Yeah, like you guys suck.
Again, we're from the Big East. We like to not like our
But
rivals.
BC's from the Big East.
Yeah, but they don't have to.
Yeah, they were just so bad at being in the Big East.
Yeah, they're just bad.
Anyway, let's talk some halftime, then we can kind of continue slash just wrap up after this.
Cool.
So, Dan, what have you been drinking?
So in the last week, I've had a couple different things from Brooklyn. I had their pills, which was pretty enjoyable, and then Brooklyn Sriracha Ace, which is probably my favorite non like large format Brooklyn beer. Which they are you find it more and more in like regular 12-ounce bottles, which is nice, and in like variety packs and stuff, which is a fairly new thing. I finished up the tomato basil saison from the farmhouse that I had, which continued to be an interesting drink. And then yesterday I had a Kolsch from Schlafly, or Schlafly, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, the St. Louis brewery.
Oh yeah.
I think
Yeah, it's slightly.
Schlafly
Yeah.
makes more sense, which was good. I don't think I had that before. I like a good Kolsch, and really, really good. So not a ton, but some interesting stuff.
Nice.
I'll be in Austin this weekend, so I'm excited to hopefully get out to Jester King, which is my like if I can only do one brewery
Do
and drag
it.
my friends to it, then that'll be the one. It's not that far from my. It's like maybe 20 minutes from where we're staying or Airbnb. So I'm gonna push to try to get over there.
That's my biggest regret,
I
the
have
fact that
quite a few people with me.
I regretted that I've been to Austin twice and I never went to Jester King just because it was too far out from where I was.
Oh really? Yeah. So we have a car rented. We should hopefully be able to get out to like most things we want to see, and I toss that in. So hopefully that'll work out. We have like 4 days, so I think I can make it happen. Just I've heard so many good things about Jester King in terms of being like one of the better breweries in the country, and I haven't had anything from them before, so I'm excited for that.
Yeah, I've had a bunch of different stuff from them. I hear trade here and there with a buddy who's in the Houston area, and they get a decent amount of Jester King stuff. I've had some Jester King stuff when I'm in town, but yeah, I have not been out to the actual brewery yet. Maybe next time I'm down there. I still have a friend that lived in Austin, so I could potentially swing that at some point, I suppose.
Worst case, I'll be able to at least have some of it in town, even if I don't get to the brewery itself.
Yeah. Any of the good craft beer bars should have something, at the very least. Let's see. A couple things I had from Monkish. Had the Savines, their blackberry and hibiscus sour. That was super good. Kind of refreshing. Almost like a tart wine. It was a very interesting flavor profile. Had some Smog City Hop Tonic. Had a Racer 5. I was out watching the Rams game a little bit and the sports bar. Racer 5 was as good as it was going to get, so that was fine to me. Stopped over at Monkish for some an IPA from them called Zoom Into the Zenith. Believe the top bill was Galaxy, Citra, and Mosaic. If I recall. Also went down to Smog City's Long Beach area tap room for some, I guess, brunch slash lunch with some friends. Grabbed a pint of Coast Rider Passion Fruit IPA that's really good. Then I was at the Laker game last night, so I had a Luponic Distortion from Firestone, their IPA. And also drank a Bavik Super Pils, just a German Pilsner. Yeah, eventful-ish. Nice. Yeah, not too crazy. I haven't drank anything yet for my birthday, but I'm probably gonna have a beer with dinner, just to stay in character.
Yeah, I mean, why you'd have to? Why wouldn't you?
Yeah, I'm not for I mentioned this a couple times that I'm gonna be in Italy starting next week, so I wanted to not put myself through too much today and this week. In terms of drinking, so that I could save up for the trip. So doing a little bit of drinking on Saturday at a brewery that I really like. That'll kind of be my celebration in a nutshell.
Yeah, that was my plan before this Austin trip. And then I ended up being out really late after the Killers concert last night and was miserable at work all day. So good plans. The best life plans of mice and men often go astray when you decide to go out for a couple drinks after the show and stay for more than a couple.
It's such a move of someone in their 20s, Dan.
I know. I'm still such a young. Such a youth.
Oh, man. All right. So I guess talk a little bit about Florida State here before we close out. Looks like Florida State is getting tested very much so by Louisville. I hope that this is just a sign of things to come, however. And that they beat Louisville, but barely, and then give us the playbook to beat them. That'd be really nice if they would oblige on that front.
Yeah, that'd be good. I would, you know, Louisville's still kind of a mystery, I feel like, as you alluded to earlier. Like, they were always going to be kind of a mess this year based on everything that went down right before the season. But I still don't really know how they're going to shake out in this league. Probably middle of the pack, but they have talent. So, like, it wouldn't totally shock me if they put it together a little bit, but they were put in a very, very tough position by everything that happened with Patino and the NCAA and the FBI scandal and everything. So,
right. Yeah. I mean, you and I said before the season, like, everyone was super high on them. We said, like, pump the brakes a little bit. Doesn't mean they won't make the tournament, but like, pump the brakes just in terms of like this team being able to compete in the upper echelons of the ACC. So far, it's been the case that they're struggling a little bit. Just because you plug in, you know, someone who played for Patino doesn't mean they can just coach like Patino. And that's kind of like a subtle jab too at all the hire Jerry Mack folks, you know, at SU. That just because you coach under Boeheim for a couple of years and you played for him doesn't necessarily mean you could just replicate the man's process and his coaching ability right off the bat.
Yeah, I mean, we were kind of seeing things play out with Mike Hopkins, and I think I'm not glad that he left or anything, but I do think we're in an interesting position, which we brought up after he did leave, to kind of evaluate what his team's going to look like. And he's off to a pretty good start overall. He beat Kansas, which we obviously didn't do. He beat USC the other night. There's still some growing pains. He obviously got blown out by UCLA the other day, and he got blown out by Gonzaga, but like, the team wasn't expected to be very good, and they might, I mean, they're probably in better position for the NCAA tournament that Syracuse is.
Yeah, which way to go, Washington.
I think you could say, like, oh, you know, obviously you're going to promote this person, or this person's going to step right in, and it's the obvious move, and Hopkins would have been the obvious move, but you don't really know what you're getting until they actually do the job. I mean, we've seen so many succession plans just like really not work out. Obviously, there are like some examples to the contrary, like Tom Izzo obviously has worked out really well at Michigan State after taking over for Judd Heathcote. But like overall, I think it's no less of a crapshoot than just an outside hire, really.
This is sadly true. I guess talking a little bit about the other side of the coin in that game, Florida State. Dan, you and I did not see Florida State doing too well this year, did we?
I don't totally remember. I think we just thought it would be like a Florida State team, and they would be like big and kind of imposing on, and not all that like actually great when it comes to playing big games. I didn't think it would be as good as like some of these recent teams even that went to the tournament with pretty big hopes and flamed out miserably. But they've been quite good so far. They're ranked 23rd in the country. Like we said before, they're pretty dominant at home. Now they are off to a 1-2 start in conference, but I think they've had a pretty tough start. I think what they had Duke, UNC, and Miami, two of those on the road, which they lost both of those, and then they beat UNC by one at home. So it's not like they've been blowing people out in league, but you know, beating UNC no matter what is always nice. The Miami and the Duke losses were both by single digits, and I think they were both pretty competitive. The Duke just pulled away at the end. I remember I watched that game, and Duke, like Florida State, I think had the lead pretty deep in the second half, and Duke just put it on in a couple minutes. But they could have won that game. It was pretty much a coin throughout. So overall, I lost Oklahoma State earlier in the year by one, but they blew out Florida, which obviously isn't this team that we probably thought was early in the year. They beat George Washington, which is a solid mid-major. They beat Big Ten power Rutgers by five, which is actually probably one of their lesser performances of the year.
Rutgers almost beat
So yeah,
Michigan State tonight.
I know I walked in. One of my roommates is a Rutgers alum. My roommate that is not Lewis, the fine editor of our podcast, is a Rutgers alum. And I walked in, I'm like, how is this happening? It was because he had it on Big Ten Network and it was an overtime.
Very, very weird. The one thing that probably, I
Right after
mean,
Michigan State, who did Michigan State just blow out? Oh no, they lost to Ohio State. So
yeah,
they're having a weird couple days here.
their whole vibe this year is weird. They're like supposed to be super good. Their assumed strength of schedule is supposed to be super good, but then you look at the actual strength of schedule and it's garbage. Like the numbers are actually garbage, like around them. I think like their non-conference schedule was something like 229th or something around there. Like despite what people think of
Yeah.
like them quote unquote testing themselves.
UNC is fine, but they're not like super great. Duke, they lost to, and Duke's not, you know, the number one team in the country like they were. And then after that, like, there wasn't a lot else there. Oakland's pretty decent, but, you know, it's not going to move the needle, really. UConn's bad. DePaul's DePaul. So yeah, it looked like it was going to be a really, really strong non-conference, and there's still some decent games on there, but it's not, you know, what we thought.
100%. The thing that amazed me the most about them was probably the fact that 17 different players have logged some sort of box score for them, which is odd. Not entirely impossible, I guess, but still 17 players is a lot. They have a lot of guys who average somewhere above 10 minutes per game. That must be a nice luxury to have as a college basketball team.
I feel like that's been the case for a bit for Florida State here. I think they've had pretty deep teams, right? Didn't have like rotation. The what year was it? They were like the was that last year where they were like a three seed?
Yeah,
And
probably.
they, I think it was last year, right? They lost to Xavier in the tournament.
Yes. Yeah, it was
Yeah, so they
definitely.
had. I mean, they were super deep that year, if I remember correctly. This, I mean, I remember seeing they also just have like a million walk-ons.
It could be that too. But yeah, I mean, it must be nice to like, recruit and be able to retain depth from year to year. That seems like a fun situation.
This is actually like a really new look team though compared to last season. Terrence Mann's like the leading returner who was an 8-point a game scorer for them last year. Now he's their leading scorer, I believe.
Yeah, 14 and a
Yeah,
half per game.
he's 14-point half. It is nice though, like they have no one over 30 minutes. They have looks like what, eight guys that play, actually nine if you like Obiagu is at 14 minutes. He just doesn't score very much, but they have nine guys who are playing at least 14 minutes a game in almost every game this year. So definitely a nice position to be in throughout the year. I don't know that it necessarily means that you're gonna be super fresh down the stretch. And also there's like the argument that you want, you'd rather have your seven or eight best guys and have them learn to play and get your rotations tight for the end of the year. But compared to like SU, I think SU's problem is so far on the other end. I would love to have 10 guys that you could go out and get a solid 15 minutes from.
Yeah, I mean that's really what you'd prefer, and in the tournament it might not matter because I think adrenaline helps, but in these regular season games, I think it definitely proves an advantage against a team like Syracuse that most nights is riding, six deep. And I, we've talked about this a little bit, that like Dolezal's become a little bit of a problem, just in terms of consistency. I don't know if it's like it's just in general just shaky play. He's turning the ball over. His scrappiness is not leading to the same positive results. And that's not to overly criticize him. It's just to say that if you're not going to be an offensive weapon or a weapon on the boards, then it starts to become problematic to have you on the floor. And that's kind of how we're in the situation we're in now, with a mostly five-man rotation. Like at one point, Dolezal was able to, get steals and really pick up loose balls and, grab 4 to 6 boards. That's not happening anymore. Most of his lines lately have been like, 7 minutes, two personal fouls, and like, maybe a missed shot. So hopefully he can turn that around because I think him in particular is kind of critical to fixing this rotation a little bit and turning it into more of a six-man group where you can give some rest to Moyer. You can get some fresh legs out there, and you can get a better group of rebounders because it really does. Ride entirely on Chukwu's success at this point, about how well this team is going to be able to crash the boards.
Yeah, it's a good point. And Florida State, I think they're almost always a pretty good rebounding team. I don't think they have like the they don't have the like two, the 2 7-footers still, I don't think, right? Or
I don't believe so.
yeah, there was a few years ago where they had like a crazy amount of size.
Yeah,
No, they have one guy who's
one,
seven
yeah.
four.
Oh, they still have
They
two
have two
seven
seven
footers.
footers.
Yeah, so that
Yeah,
worked.
one whose name is Price. He has only played in
Joe.
four games. The other one is Obiagu, who is like farther down, probably the last rotation guy for them. So in terms of like guys who actually play a lot, they are more in like the normal category of like they're actually all like in kind of Syracuse forward range. It's not like a small team, but just like I think everyone here is at least 6'1", but a lot of 6'8", a lot of 6'8", and 6', 6'6" to 6'8" range. So hopefully a team that Syracuse can battle on the boards with and have a similar performance to what they did in CUVA.
Speaking of what Florida State can do, they are now down 5 to Louisville. So that's. I don't want teams to suffer that loss before us because then they get super motivated for us.
Yeah, and then that would also break their home streak. I don't know if that really means anything, but
Yeah.
it's notable.
It is notable, just from a college basketball standpoint, even if not from a Syracuse standpoint.
Yeah, I don't know that they'll be like, all right, well, we gotta have to restart our home streak, or on the other end, like if you lose, they would also be 1-3 in ACC play to start if they dropped this one. So again, I don't know how any of this factors in. It's very easy to like assign value to things in terms of like the mental aspects of these games, but it's tough to know. Syracuse could also come out red hot and jump all over them. So we'll see. Both teams are probably going to really need this game,
Yeah, that should make things a little bit
especially.
more interesting.
Yes.
Dan, as we wrap up here, who do you think is going to win this game? I think I know who you're going to pick, but just kind of a how and why.
I'm unfortunately going to go to Florida State. I've just been very Just very worried about the state of the Syracuse team with the short rotation and the inability for anyone outside of, our big three guys to get anything going and the lack of efficiency. I just think Florida State's like a solid, if not spectacular team. They're at home. I think there are some worrying factors here in terms of like the play we've seen out of Tyus Battle as of late. And, Frank Howard obviously going in, it's a bunch of fresh guards. May not be ideal with his turnover problems. I don't think it'll be like a huge blowout or anything, but I think Florida State will probably win one, between 7 and 10 points.
Yeah, I'm gonna go a little bit closer. I think Syracuse loses, but I think they only lose by 5. I think that this one kind of gets down to the wire, and then they pull away a little bit at the end. Syracuse is kind of short due to foul trouble. That's probably going to be the biggest issue in games against deep teams like this, is what SU is able to do in terms of just keeping guys on the floor. You can't really play as physical as you'd like to with this size that Syracuse has, because you have a short bench, so you really can't have the contact that you'd normally be able to kind of encourage and endorse in this sort of setting. So unfortunately, I think foul trouble is what does us in, rather than ineffective play necessarily. Still think it's a win to grow on, and it puts us in better position, just like the Virginia game did, to hopefully get back into it a little bit. I think next week, and well, the next 2 weeks will actually be good for Syracuse, since we only have 2 games in like a what, 12-day stretch or something like that, should really help us out.
Yeah, having some rest in general should be good, especially if there is actually like a whole thing to the Battle not playing well with all the minutes that he's put up, and also the fact that like the next 2 weeks are super winnable. Two against Pitt, one against BC at home, and then at Georgia Tech. Like, if Syracuse is going to make the tournament, like they maybe have to win all four of those.
Yes, I'm firmly in that camp at this point. Unless they want to like upset Duke and North Carolina or something.
Yeah, then I mean the path just becomes so hard if you don't have those 4 wins.
Right. Well, that's a positive thing to end on, I guess. Win or die.
Yes, very, very bright and cheery here.
Anyway, as mentioned, I will not be around the next 2 weeks. Dan might be hosting with some friends from the blog. We'll see what happens there. Worst case, you're going to wait 2 weeks and then you get to hear me casually talk about Italy and the basketball that I missed, which will only end up being 2 games, which really isn't the worst thing.
Actually, it kind of worked out weirdly well.
Yeah, it did. I didn't even really look at the basketball schedule when I scheduled that. So, great. Dan, thank you as always for joining. Appreciate it, and have fun in Austin.
Thank you, and have fun in Italy, and happy birthday again. Enjoy your trip. We'll both have a lot to report on next time. I mean, I don't know. Hopefully, I'll be able to do at least one in the next 2 weeks, but. Either way, next time we're both on, we will have a lot to discuss.
Too true. That was
And
Dan.
maybe until basketball wins, we'll see.
Maybe all the basketball wins. Maybe they'll win every game from now until then. That would be
Be
ideal.
great.
Anyway, that was Dan. I'm John. Thank you everybody for listening to Troy Noon's An Absolute Podcast. You can rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, on Blog Talk, and go Orange.
Orange.